Lowe's knows that no matter your paint project, saving is at the top of your list. That's why when you shop today, you can buy one, get one free select Valspar and HGTV Home by Sherwin-Williams one coat coverage interior paints via rebate. Shop these deals in-store or online today at Lowe's. We help, you save. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. Discount taken at time of purchase. See sales associate for details. Offer valid 8/21 through 9/3.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Crime Weekly News. I'm Derek Levasseur.
And I'm Stephanie Harlow.
And this was a quick turnaround. Last week on Crime Weekly News, we were covering the murder of Dustin Jersom, 35 years old, from Montana. He was found on October 10th. And we had talked about some different scenarios. We discussed the friend who reported finding him. We also threw out some theories. And it turns out, unfortunately, one of our theories were correct. Another scenario is this person approaches the campsite as a friendly and they say, hey, you know, I ran out of water or I ran out of food. And kudos to law enforcement. We had talked about this one and how it was solvable and what they could do. And there is an update and arrest in this case. And Stephanie's going to talk about it.
Yeah. So they actually identified the person who's responsible for taking Dustin's life as 41-year-old Darren Christopher Abbey. And they were able to arrest him after his DNA was discovered on a beer can at the campsite where Dustin's body was found. It looks like Dustin was killed on October 10th. He was found 2 days later by friends who thought he'd been mauled by a bear. The men, who they didn't know each other. So the guy who was arrested, Darren Christopher Abbey, did not know Dustin before they happened to run into each other in the great outdoors. And the Gallatin County Sheriff, Sheriff Dan Springer, he said there's no motive for the attack yet, but apparently Dustin Jersom welcomed his killer to share his campsite, which is about 35 miles south of the city of Bozeman, Montana. And at some point, the killer, Abby, he hit Dustin with a piece of wood, then stabbed him with a screwdriver, and then attacked him with an axe. The suspect allegedly returned to the crime scene later to remove items from the camp he thought might tie him to the murder, but he missed that beer can with his DNA on it. He has confessed to the killing, so this isn't an investigation type thing. He told police he attacked his victim after discovering him at the site where he had planned to camp.
Mm-hmm.
And then this guy, the killer, Abby, led the police to several items he'd stolen from the campsite, including an axe, guns, and a cooler. And Sheriff Springer has said, quote, this appears to be a heinous crime committed by an individual who had no regard for the life of Dustin Jersom. We have a bit of his story. We don't really know what the true story is, end quote. Yeah, I mean, it can't just be you were camped at the place where I wanted to camp. There has to be something else going on here.
There could be. So Mr. Abbey's currently being held on $1.5 million bail, so he's not going anywhere, hopefully. We talked about it last week, and we talked about some potential theories surrounding this, like what could be the motive behind it. And although it may not make sense to you and I did mention that hunters and fishermen, they are very territorial about their areas. I've had it happen to me, frankly, where, not to this extreme, obviously, but I've had it happen to me where there's the more veteran fishermen. I was relatively new to it, getting a boat, going out there, and I'm sitting in a specific area, and here this guy comes with his buddy or whatever, and they're huffing and puffing because they came around the corner, and I'm already in their spot, quote-unquote, in their spot. And they'll make a passive-aggressive comment like, oh, you know, how long are you going to be there, or how's the fish today? You know, yeah, we know it's a good spot. Nice of you to, you know, hop in there. Or there's even more extremes where I've had a situation or two where, especially when you're doing like freshwater fishing, you want to be still, you want to be quiet. if somebody's not happy with me, they may do something like drive by really fast on their boat to disturb the water and scare the fish. They didn't say anything, but they said a lot without saying anything at all. So when we were talking about this last week and we were talking about how, you know, he was out there by himself, it was either this plot that had taken place that we were going to learn about, or it was going to be this territorial type situation where somebody who clearly has some issues, some anger issues at minimum, was pissed off that Jerson was in his spot, and it appears to be the case. And we talked about how they would identify the killer, because if this was a stranger, we talked about the idea of finding something at the campsite that may link back to the suspected killer. And that's exactly what happened. It appears that Abby said, oh, you know what? Shit. You know, with science and technology these days, they're catching people all the time with DNA and other ways of catching them. So my GPS data from whatever I'm carrying, if he's carrying a phone or not, is going to tie him back here. And now on top of that, if my DNA is found at the crime scene, that's a problem because I don't know Jerson. So if my DNA is found at that campsite, I'm in trouble. So he goes back there and he does, I think, what the majority of people would do. He grabs the items that were used in the actual crime. He probably has this level of urgency to get out of there as quickly as possible, just in case someone else stumbles upon the campsite. And in the process of hastily going through everything, he forgets that at some point he probably came into the campsite and presented himself as a friendly, like some fishermen have done to me, until they start talking. And he's having a beer with them, thinking about when to make his move, and then he attacks, but he forgot that he did that. Think about this incident and what happened. I'm not saying Abby's a good person, but it was a horrific murder. So a lot of it is probably just he blacked out during some of it and forgot that maybe even he had a beer with Jerson beforehand. And fortunately, he left that beer can behind. And this is just another great example of where we are in society right now when it comes to law enforcement. DNA, man, it's a superstar. And the scary thing is, it's only going to get better. But 10 years ago, 15 years ago, that's not that long ago, this crime would not have been solved this fast. But now, you take a sip of a bear can and you're effed. You're done.
Did you say bear can?
Beer can.
I get what you're saying. And we even last week we were talking about it. We were like, man, it's the middle of nowhere, no cell phone service. Yeah. Like, it might be impossible to figure out who did this, you know, because they're not going to be so stupid to like leave their DNA hanging around. But here you are. He was.
With a murder that involved as well, it would be hard not to have some type of transfer of trace evidence. I mean, the beer can, just stupidity. He missed it, right? But even if when the attack occurred, whether it was defensive wounds or whatever, I mean, I don't know what else we're going to find out, but you would expect some type of, you know, altercation to take place, unless he caught Jerson completely off guard, where maybe he would have the attacker's DNA under his fingernails or on his jacket, whatever. But the beer can is just a complete mistake on Abby's part. He just flat out missed it.
I think it's absolutely ridiculous that this was a violent murder, right? Like, somebody was angry who did this.
Oh, yeah.
That's what they said. To find out you never even met this person before, and the most that they did to you is camp where you planned on camping, and that was the motivation for this horrendous, violent, brutal murder. There's some mental health things going on here. There has to be.
And you could be right, too. There may be more to the story that we end up finding out. It may have started off with Abby being pissed off that he was in his spot. And then maybe there's a conversation happening. Who knows what it could be about? Who knows? Where it irritates him even more, what something he says.
Yeah, where he was kind of maybe even joking, like, oh, you got my spot. And Dustin was like, well, you know, early bird gets the worm. Kind of just like playing it off, not thinking this guy was seriously pissed. And then Abby over here is like, did he really just say that to me? And then he snaps. Who knows? But regardless, the fact that people are walking around out there on the verge of snapping like this, that is the true crime and the true scary thing that we need to address. That people are really struggling with their mental health right now. People have a lot of anger issues. People are on the verge. A lot of people are kind of just really run thin because it has to really nothing happened here that was serious as far as we know. Abby admitted to it as soon as the police got to him, and he wasn't like, oh, this guy attacked me or, you know, tried to attack me and I was defending myself. So as far as we know, he hasn't even alleged that. This is a scary situation.
I'm speculating here based on what they have said, but the fact that Gersom was struck with a piece of wood, stabbed with a screwdriver, and also attacked with the axe indicates to me that there was some type of altercation, maybe a mutual altercation, and that could have been just Gersom defending himself, but it seems like this was an evolution where maybe the intent wasn't to kill at first. This could have been two drunk guys in the middle of a fight out in the woods, and they're both grabbing stuff, because it sounds like a piece of wood or a screwdriver, those are things that were accessible and in arm's reach at the time when the fight's transpiring, and then the axe is what's done to finish the job. And so to make sure that whoever, you know, to make sure that Gersom's dead. So there could be more to the story where we find out that, as I just mentioned, they're arguing over something, a punch gets thrown, they're rolling around on the ground, Abby's able to get a piece of wood, he whacks Gersom with it, he gets off, grabs a screwdriver again that's nearby, or maybe he has it on himself, pulls the screwdriver out, he stabs him. Now Gersom's injured, and he's more than likely fatally injured, and that's when Abby grabs the axe and finishes him off. So there's definitely more to this story. Not saying any of it makes it better, but I'm curious to find out what Abby ends up conveying, what the motive was. Like, how did this transpire? Is he going to go with the defense angle where he says, listen, we're out there, we're having some beers. All of a sudden, Gersom started talking crazy. He pushed me, he shoved me, he punched me in defense of myself. I grabbed a piece of wood and I whacked him with it. And then Gersom picked up a screwdriver and attacked me, and I was able to get it off him. Who knows? The sad thing is there's only one side to the story now. Hopefully, forensically, they can tell if he's lying or not. But I'm going to be interested to see how this goes at trial.
And
because
does Abby have defensive wounds?
Exactly. Yeah, does he have injuries?
Right.
Now, I'm not defending the guy. It's probably not going to work out that way, but it's not going to stop him from at least presenting that argument. And I'm sure his attorney's going to tell him to do so as well. So we'll have to keep following this one. This is why we do these cases on Crime Weekly News. They're topical, they're current, and they're a little bit, there's not as much meat on the bone, so it's not really enough for a Crime Weekly episode, but it's an interesting conversation and there's a lot that we can learn. And it also, I enjoy it because it kind of sends the message that law enforcement is really getting good, especially from a forensics perspective, where if you commit a crime and you're not on your A game, you're going to get caught. And I say it, I've said it since we started the show, you know, detectives, we try to be as good as we can, but ultimately we're just trying to find the mistakes. And the margin of error when committing a crime because of science, not even because of us, but because of science, is becoming smaller and smaller. That window where you can get away with something, you really got to be on it. You might as well wear like a Tyvek suit and just cover yourself from head to toe with a mask and gloves, because otherwise you're probably going to leave something behind, and the labs out there are good enough to find it now. It's a great thing. Great thing for us, bad thing for criminals.
I'm just a little like unsettled. I want to take a quick break and go into our next story, but I'm unsettled because when you hear a story like this, a man gets attacked while he's camping in the woods, you're like, oh, it's a serial killer. It's a psychopath. You know, that's what you would expect. That's what you would think about. But now it's just like, it could be just your fellow man, any random person who's like dealing with something hard in their life, who feels like they have a reason to snap and lash out, can be a danger to you now. And it was like we used to be able to depend on each other, and now we have to keep our guard up against every single person we meet, because it's not just your Charles Mansons or Ted Bundys out there that are systematically going around and acting crazy. It's just the average person now, and that's kind of unsettling for me. But
I'm with you. It's tough. And you know, we're going into this break, and it's the funny story behind it is, as we were researching this case, and you think about this has got to be a one in a million, right? Bear attack turns out to be a murder. Well, as we were researching this case, there's another crime relating to a bear attack, or the alleged bear attack. So we're going to take our one and only break. We'll be right back. I'm going to talk about that case because it's a crazy one.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. we do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Your kids could get free or low-cost health coverage from Medicaid or CHIP. Even if you've applied before, they may be eligible now. Kids up to age 19 are covered for checkups, vaccines, dentist visits, hospital care, and more. And if they already have Medicaid or CHIP, remember to renew every year. Visit insurekidsnow.gov or call 877-KIDS-NOW. Paid for by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Yeah, so we're back. When I was trying to pull up articles about the
true story here,
the Dustin Jurcim case, I was like, Derek, this is crazy, because it looks like the guy that they arrested actually has done this before. And then we figured out we were talking about two completely different cases. However, they all just happened. So Dustin Jurcim's killer is arrested, and then this other guy.
This is an isolated incident. They're not connected.
Then this other guy is arrested for staging a bear attack so he could steal somebody's identity. So it's absolutely insane.
What are the chances? And this happened, you were like, Derek, this article got released 2 hours ago.
2 hours ago. So his name's Nicholas Wayne Hamlet. He pretended to be a man named Brandon Andrade. So this was October 24th, around 11:34 p.m. This guy, Nicholas Wayne Hamlet, called 911 and he said, my name's Brandon Andrade. I'm injured and trapped in a body of water because a bear chased me off a cliff while I was hiking in Hamilton County, Tennessee. And so authorities traced the call to an area near Tellico Plains, northwest or northeast of Chattanooga. And there they found a corpse with this guy, Brandon Andrade's identification. But then they kind of looked further into it and they were like, okay, the injuries are not consistent with a bear attack. The injuries are not consistent with a fall from a high height. And on top of that, once they did the DNA and fingerprints and stuff, they were like, this is not Brandon Andrade either, even though he's the guy who called and the guy whose ID we found. So then they identified the dead body as 34-year-old Knoxville resident Stephen Douglas Lloyd. And apparently, Nicholas Wayne Hamlet, who's the guy who called pretending to be Brandon Andrade, met Stephen, became friends with him, lured him into a wooded area so that he could take Stephen's life and his identity. Police said they later learned that Brandon Andrade's ID had been stolen by Hamlet and he was using it. And they believe that Hamlet stole the identification of Brandon Andrade to escape parole and then faked his own death for an unknown reason. So basically, he killed his friend, Stephen, so that he could plant this fake identity on him and, I guess, fake Brandon Andretti's death. Okay, so then the way they end up capturing the guy, and there's so many names that are included with this case. So the main guy, Nicholas Wayne Hamlet, who used Brandon Andrade as like an alias and who killed his friend, Stephen. Police in South Carolina notified the police in Tennessee that they had a fugitive who was armed and dangerous at a local hospital. So then the police wrote on Facebook, basically, they wanted to thank the media, the news media, for sharing Hamlet's wanted poster throughout the country because this is what made it possible for the people in South Carolina to identify him at their hospital. And then, obviously, he was caught. And that's pretty much all it is now. But I liked the statement that Joseph Carrico, who's the special agent in charge of the FBI's Nashville field office, said during a press conference. He said, quote, the long arm of the law has a long and huge reach, and we will find you no matter where you hide. The deputies and investigators here know their country well. The TBI agents know their state well. The FBI and the Marshal Service know that country well and have reached across the world, so there's nowhere to hide, end quote. And basically, it kind of goes back to what you were saying when we were discussing the first case, where it's like you're in a place now where technology, law enforcement, they've reached a progression where it's very difficult to do anything and get away with it, whether it's cameras, whether it's DNA, whether it's fingerprints, whether it's, you know, having the news media, but not only that, social media to pass around wanted posters. It's hard to do something and get away with it now, which is kind of the place we want to be.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And it's not only when we talk about the evolution of science and technology when it comes to DNA, because I think that's what everyone thinks about. It's the communication abilities as well. and the databases that we now all share. You have NamUs, you have APHIS, you have CODIS, you have NCIC, all these different acronyms. What it means is basically it's a sharing of information throughout the country, sometimes throughout the globe, where something can happen in California and there can be evidence there that the guy in South Carolina who's working his own case, who doesn't even know anything about this crime that happened in California, can just enter something into CODIS or enter something into APHIS, and all of a sudden the computer program does all the work for them and says, hey, guess what? Your person you're looking for, they've also done it before here and they had a suspect in that one. And then the ball starts rolling. On top of that, the sharing of information, like you said, you have people that are from all parts of the country now. We're all communicating with each other through whether it's our internal databases where we're able to digitally share information with other agencies and create a multi-jurisdictional operation, which is the sake of the internet. So again, those capabilities are allowing us to work together collectively to solve cases faster, especially when time is of the essence. So I love it. It's a great thing for all of us, especially people who are concerned for their safety. Yes, there's no perfect plan. And as Stephanie was saying, you got to be aware of your surroundings because you're ultimately the first line of defense. And I know I've said it before, you got to go out there with a certain level of apprehension because you just don't know. You just don't know anymore what people have in store for you or what their intentions are. So it's better to be safe than sorry. The good news is, just like we were talking about some of our ads, we were mentioning Simply Safe a few minutes ago when we were recording our ads. These types of measures don't only serve as something that can be reactive, they're proactive. So by taking a proactive approach and being out there and being aware of your surroundings, you can prevent something from happening in the first place. But unfortunately, if something does happen to you or someone you care about with the reactive measures that are now available through law enforcement, the chances of catching your offender are much higher, which is a good thing for everyone because yes, we're going to catch him, but I think it also serves as a deterrent for most people out there who may say, you know what, there's someone I can grab right there. And then they think about, shit, I have my phone on me and there's cameras here and I didn't turn my phone off prior to this, so my GPS coordinates are going to tie me to this. If they're smart, those are the things they're thinking about. And maybe that's the reason they decide not to do it. I don't care why they decide not to do it, as long as they don't. So it's a good thing all around. These stories never get old and it's fascinating to see where we're going. And I'm really interested to see where we are 10 years from now. Like, we joke about it, but like, it's going to be freaking Minority Report.
Yeah, it'll be pre-crime, which is not what we want, but
that's not what we want. And that kind of wraps up our coverage on these two cases. I'm going to transition, which is a nice segue about pre-crime and where we could go. And it's relating to the CrimeCon cruise. I just got back and there was an interesting question on the cruise. But before I get to that, I just want to thank everyone who attended, specifically for Crime Weekly. Obviously, Stephanie couldn't be there, but everyone who came up to me was so nice. They had nothing but well wishes toward you and your family. And it's just really great to see all the support that we have out there because we don't get that a lot by being behind these cameras. We only get the comments and stuff. So to see you guys in person, it was an incredible experience. It's the first one ever done. Stephanie, we'll talk. We haven't even talked about it yet, but you're going to have to come to the next one. It was awesome. The amount of crowd solving we did, working with people like Matt Murphy, Paul Holes, Cheryl McCollum, Nate Eaton, who, by the way, I told him you're a fan of his and you guys, you're going to love him. He's great. And then obviously the team at CrimeCon, they were amazing as well. Everyone was awesome. And I end this episode with this question that was posed to us on the final day. I don't know if I mentioned Paul Holes. I think I might have forgot to mention the GSK guy, right? The one who solved it all. Paul Holes was there as well. Incredible dude, really intelligent. And we had this final day where it was Cheryl McCollum, who's CSI, Matt Murphy, who's a prosecutor, never lost, from what I understand. If I was looking at statistics, he's pretty good. He's got a good winning record, we'll say that. And then Nate Eaton, incredible investigative journalist, and then Paul Holes, investigator, specializes in DNA. The question was posed to us on the last day, could we get to a point where scientists are able to identify a genetic marker within these dangerous individuals, the people who are the worst of the worst, where going forward, we can look for that marker that's mostly found in these violent offenders?
Haven't they already sort of done that with the brain? They've identified the brain that in brain scans like this. I think we've talked about this before, that there's, I forget what it's called, But there is a guy who has went to prisons and scanned the brains of, you know, violent criminals and has found similarities in their brain structures. And there's, I forget exactly what it is, but there's something in there that he has seen and identified sort of as the serial killer gene.
That's interesting. And that is something where, again, I'm not a scientist, this is way above my pay grade, but it's almost like CTE, right? Like the brain can change over time based on your experiences. And maybe through these scans, they're able to find something that happens in the brain that causes these individuals to do what they do. But this person was posing the question, like, at birth, you'd be able to identify this genetic marker and understand that they were predisposed to this high likelihood of violence. And we all agreed. We all agreed that that's not, you can't go that direction. You can't go there, even if you were able to find it, because they haven't done anything yet. So, you know, I was glad to hear everyone on the panel was like, yeah, that'd be great, but we can't get to the point where because
and
someone
then what
has
would
a certain
you do?
Genetic,
yeah.
What do you do? Oh, throw the baby back. Can't use it. That one's no good. They're going to be a serial killer.
Yeah, like, so, how would you? It's the MAOA gene study for anybody that wants to sort of look into it. It's a rare mutation leading to a complete deficiency of monoamine oxidase A, which is associated with impulsive and aggressive behavior. And then with that and frontal lobe stuff and all sorts of other things.
Yeah, a lot going on there.
That's crazy.
Pre-crime, it's coming.
It kind of goes back to that thing, like, if you could go back in time and kill baby Hitler, would you? Right? Because you know what he's going to do.
Mm.
But is he going to do that? Or was it, you know, a nature versus nurture thing? Or was it the way he was brought up? He hasn't done it yet. He's just an innocent baby right now. It's like a complex moral and ethical sort of conversation.
I'll take one for the team. I'm booting him off the boat.
You're booting baby Hitler?
You know what? You guys, you know, I might end up, if you're someone who's religious, I'm probably not going to the right place, but I'm taking one for the team.
It's a complex moral and ethical conversation. And Derek's like, not for me.
See ya. No, I mean, listen, if it wasn't him, it probably would have been someone else, right? Someone else would have taken that.
I don't know.
Taking that role. But I would have taken one for the team out there. Don't worry, guys. If you've told me that's him, you know what? Look the other way, Stephanie.
But you just believe the people that tell you that's baby Hitler?
No, I'm saying if we had a time machine and I knew for sure that that's baby Hitler, like the mustache was already starting to come in, I would say, Stephanie, don't look.
I'd be like, we have to have a conversation about this, Derek. And you'd be like, yeah, okay, yeah. Stephanie, can you go and grab me a chair so we can have a conversation about this? Yeah.
And I come back and I'm going to go, wait, what? I don't know where.
You're like, where'd that baby go?
He ran off.
He was only a baby. I don't know. He learned how to walk really fast.
You thought he could fly.
Oh, my God. Okay, enough. Let's wrap it.
Okay. So, serious note, though. Thank you so much. Thank you to everybody who came out to CrimeCon. Looking forward to Denver. We will both be there for Denver. And if you're ever thinking about doing the Crime Cruise in the future, strongly recommend it. I can tell you now, after experiencing it, it was a great time. Although, we did have to go through, like, a tropical storm, and the water got a little choppy one night.
Did you get seasick? Were you sick?
I actually was fine.
Really?
I was fine the whole time. I don't know. And because we got detoured because of the tropical storm, the only change that we had, which wasn't necessarily a bad one, was because of the storm, we had to detour from Jamaica to the Dominican, which I'd never been to the Dominican, so that was kind of cool.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Was the weather good there in Dominican?
Oh, it was amazing.
Yeah.
The only thing I missed is, like, there was a monkey exhibit there, and I was in the port, but I just must have missed it because I saw Nate Eaton and Cheryl McCollum got pictures with the monkeys, and I missed it. I was pretty pissed off about that.
I'm pissed
off. I was
off
by
for
myself.
You. Yeah.
You know, I was just out there drinking my pineapple pina colada, and I had nobody. You just left me.
Are you saying if I was there, I would have made sure you got to the monkey exhibit?
I mean, you might have. You're always questioning me, so you probably would be like, Derek, but what about the monkey? You know, you would have came up with something.
I would have.
But that's all we got. We're going to get into this week's Gypsy Rose. We're going to be recording it right now. Mm-hmm. You'll see it on Friday if you're listening on audio, and on Sunday if you're watching on YouTube. We appreciate you guys being here. Everyone stay safe out there. We will see you later this week.
Bye.
Chances are you've been to the doctor recently and you probably handed over your insurance, your ID, and even your social security number. Your doctor is just one of many places that has your personal info, and if any of them accidentally expose your details, you could be at risk for identity theft. LifeLock monitors millions of data points a second. If you become a victim, they'll fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.